Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got a fascinating guest in store for you today. But of course, first we have a little section from my book, Everyday Awakening. And let's get to that right now. So the section today is entitled, "We can truly help others when we come from a place of joy." Many of us are called to be in service to others, to help others heal, to support them in their growth. But there is something to be careful of when we are, for it is quite easy to use helping others to distract us from doing our own work to heal ourselves. To look at our own internal processes and to take time to care and nurture ourselves. It is quite appealing to focus on others. After all, look how much worse off they are compared to us. We know what they need. We see things so clearly for them. We want to help, and we do. Yet it is easy to forget about ourselves in the process. We put our own needs to the side. We put everyone else first and ourselves last. And that is a recipe for a crash. For we cannot continue to only help others without taking care of our own needs, our own growth, our own healing. In the end, all healing is self-healing, all growth is self-growth. To be in service is a beautiful thing as long as we don't forget to fill up our own cup first and ensure that we are giving from a place of overflow rather than from a place of scarcity, a place of true inner peace and not a place of avoidance. It is seductively easy to keep our attention on others and lose our own opportunity to heal and grow. Yet when we focus on our own path first, helping others becomes easier. We have a new perspective and can see things more clearly. We can help as long as we are truly helping from a place of joy, not distraction. Can you joyfully help others? Have you filled up your own cup first? So I wrote this section of my book a while ago, and I wrote it, if I recall properly, it was out of a sense of observation of seeing because I know a lot of healers, I know a lot of practitioners, and I was seeing with more than a couple that they were so focused on helping everybody else that they weren't doing their own work. And not only weren't they doing their own work, they were like, you know, kind of letting themselves go. They started having health problems. They started having challenges with their personal life, with other things. And it really, it became sort of, I was concerned. of what was going on. And I talked to one of my teachers about it, and he brought up like how easy it is to use helping others, how using helping others can help us to distract from doing our own work. And then of course, I mentioned it many times before, I had a teacher who who was a wonderful healer, who helped others. He did a lot of great things, but he didn't do his own work. And what happened because of that was he ended up, how shall I put it delicately? He ended up allowing his own trauma to affect how he worked with others. And that really was kind of a real breaking point in my level of trust in him. And it also, though, like helped me to see so clearly that we can never stop doing our own work, that no matter how much healing we have done, there is always more layers of the onion to peel. And that really, if we're going to give to others, if we're going to dedicate our life to a life of service, of helping others, of being that person where other people come to, if we're not really taking care of ourselves, if we're not really making sure that we're in a good place, then we're not really going to help other people in the way they really need it. And here's how insidious and how challenging it can be. When we don't feel good about ourselves, and we only get our self-worth from helping other people, and someone comes to us, and what they really need is a little bit of tough love. What they really need is someone to kind of like gently and kindly and compassionately smack them upside the head and say, "What are you doing? Cut it out. You need to, you know, get yourself together." But because we haven't done our own work, because we're coming from a place of lack, we kind of feel like, oh, you know, I don't want to offend this person. I don't want them to get mad at me or whatever. So instead of giving them the 2x4 up the side of the head, we're too kind and gentle and nice. And we're like, oh, it's okay. Everything will be fine. Just don't worry about it. And we just give them a bunch of platitudes, which isn't really what they need in the moment. And doesn't really help or serve them truly. And this is where, when it's so important to fill up our own cup first, because when we feel so full, when we have taken care of ourselves and we really feel good, then we're not worried about what they think of us. We're not concerned that they're going to be mad or angry at us if we do the right thing. So then we can apply that tough love. Then we can be not stern, but we can be firm with them. We can be firm with our boundaries. We can be firm with what's right and what's not right for us. And we can say to them, look, I know you're having a tough time, but you know that better than anyone that you're contributing to this, and look at your part of this. And we can, with more confidence, with more certainty, we can help them to really look at their piece of the overall relationship or challenge or whatever it is that they're dealing with. But to do that, when we're coming from a place of lack, when we're coming from a place of not feeling like, we're good enough, we can't be strong, we can't be firm, We can't hold ourselves in the way we need to hold ourselves to really be the person that they need to help them to move along on their path. And I know it can be challenging. And I know it kind of goes against in some ways. It's like, oh, I just want to help. You know, it's that sense of like, oh, I just want to be there for people. I just want to help. But what I would say is, if you ever hear yourself saying that to yourself, if you ever feel yourself, oh no, I just need to help this person, I would take a look back and ask yourself, is there anything I'm trying to avoid? Am I using helping someone else as an excuse not to do my own work? When we can honestly answer that and say, no, I'm not using this to avoid. I'm doing this because it's truly coming from a place of joy, a place of happiness, a place because helping others just raises my spirit so much that there's nothing else I'd rather be doing. You know, then we're getting in alignment. Then we're coming from a place where we can truly help others and not just a place of, oh, I just need to do this because it'll make me feel better. Oh, no, it's you know, oh, I can't look at this. I can't be by myself. I can't do my own stuff. I just need to help them. So this section of my book in particular goes out to all those people out there, those healers, coaches, consultants, people who work with people. If you're listening to the show today and you're hearing this message, it's for you. There's a reason why you happen to tune in and you happen to hear this. So I want you to really take it to heart and really consider when you find yourself so much looking to help others to check, to make sure that you're not trying to avoid something that you need to work on yourself. Okay. That's the section from my book. It is in that particular section is we can truly help others when we come from a place of joy. And you can, that's from my book, Everyday Awakening. And of course, you can get it at everydayawakeningbook.com. Anyway, so before I introduce my guests, let's take our first break. So we have our break. And when we come back, I'll introduce my guest. And we'll get into today's topic, which is healing for a new generation. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on talkradio.nyc and on Facebook Live. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I appreciate you all being with us today. I see loyal listener Patty from she's from Monroe, Washington today. Patty's always someplace cool. So thank you for checking in, Patty. Always nice to know that you're here with us today. Hopefully some other of our loyal listeners will check in today. All right, so now it is time for me to welcome our guest. Let me introduce him for you. It is my pleasure to welcome teacher, high priest, and healer, Sadhu Da. Sadhu Da is a student of the Theravadin lineage under Master Hong Sak and Master Thanaphol Pakdi. He has years of experience and training with the inner door secrets of Thai Buddhist magic. After the Sadhu Da became a Mophi in Theravadin tradition, he then had the privilege of studying under Rinpoches and Lamas from the Bampo Tibetan lineage, where he became a Lama through initiation. In continued learning, he's now a formal student in the Mao Shan sect of Taoism under the High Priest Yang in Malaysia. With careful practice and plenty of devotion, Sadhu Da became a high priest in a Wiccan coven studying under Jeffrey Duell in Norse magic. Became a master hypnotist under the guidance of the Shambhala Institute. Sadhu Da is a passionate practitioner in Fukien Shan and a Sechem level Reiki master, among many other titles. Through a love of learning and a studious approach, Sadhu Da has undergone the ritual rites and testing of many traditions and customs. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Sadhu Da. Remember to unmute yourself. Yeah.
I clicked on mute, but then it muted itself.
Oops. Welcome. How are you doing today?
A little bit tired, but hey, I'm here.
All right. Thanks for the honesty. So I have to tell you, you know, Theravadin, people in the Theravadin tradition are always of special, always hold a special place for us here on talkradio.nyc, because the founder of the network became a Theravadin monk, and he is off in the forests of Malaysia meditating every day.
Well, I'd say, you know, because of the background that I came from. Yeah, I grew up in, like, if I'm just being completely blunt, a lot of gang violence, very Ooh. Ghetto area. And, you know, I was a poverty kid, and that's just what it was. And everybody always wanted something from you, or was trying to get one over on you, or was scheming in some way. And when I first met Master Thanaphol Pakdi, this was the first man in my life I'd ever met that wanted to give me something and didn't want to take anything in return. Wow. And that is what really started me down this whole path, like a decade ago, was when I met a monk at a temple in the middle of nowhere in Texas, of all places.
And in Texas. I was curious, like, where did you meet a Theravadin monk here in the States?
Yeah, he was in Killeen, Texas, at a sister temple, Wat Pa Samake. And he just, you know, he spoke to me as if I was an equal, where, you know, it's no secret that, you know, certain cultures around the world have, you know, stereotypes and right. ways of treating other people. And that's universal. Well, right. because of all of the tattoos and the hair and everything, when I went to go and check out this temple, some of the Asian families there were like, hey, you know, they went up and told the monks, like, there's a sketchy, you know, scary man, you know, with tattoos, and he's skulking around the temple. And it's not at all what was happening. I was just, you know, looking around. And so they went and they told the monks this. And as you know, with the Theravadan culture, monks are like celebrities. You know, if you can get FaceTime with a monk, like, that's kind of, you know, everybody wants that. And so I'm just walking around, and I'm looking at, like, you know, this this like big clay, like Somdesh Pra, like, you know, the Buddha on a stupa, like this this amulet in front of like this statue. And I'm like looking at these different things. I'm like, just kind of didn't know anything about them. And this monk comes up to me, and he's just talking to me casually, telling me some of the stories, some of the culture, the history and everything, and just very open-ended. And I was learning some stuff. And then these people who originally told the monks that I was this sketchy, you know, kind of like predatory type guy, come up, and they want to talk to Master Thanaful, because they see him talking and engaging with me. Mm. And he's like, no. Like, you made a judgment about this man. You said, you know, he was this and that. And, you know, I've come to talk to him, and I find that, you know, he's perfectly fine young gentleman. And, you know, you made a judgment. And so you can go over there, you can wait to talk to the other monks, but I'm giving my time to this man right here. And so it was just that, for the first time in my life, not having to feel like there was some sort of scheme being run, or like, you know, I was going to have to pay something in some way, and that there was no judgment, there were no barriers. And it was just me openly, honestly connecting with another human being and receiving in a way I'd never received before. That's what started me down this path.
Wow. And what was it that got you to go to the temple in the first place? Like, why did you even, like, you know, go and take a look? Because normally someone in that kind of situation, if you're involved with gangs or like other stuff, it's like you wouldn't even go anywhere near a temple.
Well, the honest truth is I heard from someone, you know, that like they had some cool sculptures and things of that nature around around the place, and I was bored and I had like nothing to do at the time, and I just kind of said, hey, you know, like, let's go check it out. It was not me trying to embark on a spiritual quest. It was not some trying to like discover myself. No, I was genuinely just bored. And I wanted to go look at some cool art.
That's cool. You know, and that's perfect, because that's the way spirit works, right? It's when these little points of where we at that spirit kind of gets in there and just gives a little nudge one place, and so we show up, and then it can completely change the course of our life. So you went there, you had this experience with the monk, kind of like treat you with respect, probably the first time you ever felt respected in your life, and it got you curious. So then what happened from there? Take us along, just at least the broad sketch of like, how did you go from being, you know, just curious about this stuff to like really diving in deep with both feet?
You know, it when I think back on it now, it feels like it all happened so fast. You know, I ended up opening a door that day, and that door that I opened led me to meet, my sifu and Fu Kyung Chuan. It led me to meet, you know, this Lama and this Rinpoche. It led me to meet Master Pong Sok through Master Thanaful. I went on so many different adventures and journeys in it. And it was like kind of like follow the white rabbit, you know. It all started with me just like blindly following this monk. There was something about Master Thanaful where at that point in my life, you know, I just said, you know what? I don't know what this man has, but he has something I want. and I'm going to follow him. So I pledged myself to him, like pretty much from the get-go. And then we ended up reuniting like a year later, something like that. And, but that seed had already been planted, and I ended up meeting, you know, some other teachers along that way. And then when I reunited with him, it was that, that's when I became his apprentice. Right. And so,
now that I'm wondering, like, that must have not been very easy, because I imagine you were in a certain culture at the time. I mean, your friends or your associates at the time, they must have given you a hard time about that, or no?
I disappeared. I dropped out of everyone's lives around me. Some people thought I was dead. Others thought I was locked up. Yeah, I just
that's interesting.
Fully so devoted myself.
Cut yourself off. And was there anything about like going in that direction and following that path that was at the time very challenging for you?
Yeah. The biggest part, and you know, it's kind of like funny what you were talking about earlier from your book. The hardest thing I ever had to do was I had to face myself. Yeah. I had to face my trauma. I had to face, you know, who I wanted to be was different from who I felt like I was. And I had to shift through healing work, that feeling of inadequacy, that feeling of hatred against the world, that feeling of not being enough, to self-love. And that was the biggest journey out of all the miles I've traveled, out of everything I did. That was the biggest journey I had to make.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sure that is hard, especially when you're coming from sort of a kind of background where you probably felt neglected. You were, you know, used to people who always got an angle. Everyone's trying to get something from you. So you end up trying to get something from everyone else. So yeah, to kind of shift all that and shift that perspective into one that's a kind, more gentle to ourselves, more loving, must have been a bit of a challenge. And so, so you said you reconnected him a year later and you sort of dedicated yourself with him. How long was that sort of initial period that you worked with Thanafol?
About like 3 years, like a good solid three to four years, actually, where I was not working like a mainstream job, and I just followed a monk around.
Now you didn't become a monk yourself, did you?
I briefly took on the vows just to get the experience, but I mean, that was not more so the path that I was you know dedicated to. I liked learning the teachings and the magic, and so I'm like what they would call like a lay person with magic, or more properly an ajarn, because a lot of these things that some of these monks study, you know, was like directly learned, but me not being a monk, I can't say that I'm a monk.
Right.
But I got the experience just for a little bit briefly, just to know what it was all about.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, cool. It's time for us to take our next break. So when we come back, I want to talk about that magic a little bit, because, you know, we don't often think about, you know, monks who've donned their robes and they're walking around with their begging bowl for their getting their one meal a day. We don't often think of that with magic, although with in certain traditions, we hear a lot about different magic practices. And then how did you sort of make the jump from sort of the Theravadan tradition to then becoming a Wiccan and really getting into some more, I guess, earth-based practices, I'll call it, okay?
Sounds good.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Sadhu Da, and we will be right back after these messages.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas.
This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So, Saruda, we were talking, don't forget to unmute. We were talking about how, you know, you sort of dedicated yourself, you followed around this Theravadan monk, and then you started to talk about magic. So what do you mean by magic, and what sort of practices or what sort of things did you learn that were really magical to you?
Tai Wicha. So Tai Wicha is so unique in the way it was kind of culturally blended. It took an influence from Malaysia, and even Burmese Nat worship, and Pali canon from Cambodia, and just all these influences of the countries surrounding it. Back when it was still Siam, pre-14th century, you had this old animistic tradition, very akin to when we talk about shamanism in Native American, spirituality these days, or even in Canadian, shamanism of the natives. And right. So these practices were deeply rooted in the people, in the culture, and generations going back. But then when Buddhism took shape and took over, and kind of essentially converted, what we call Thailand now, you have this beautiful integration where you would see these monks, they would want to ultimately free people, liberate them from their own suffering, right? Through these teachings of the Dhamma. And be able to help one on their own spiritual path of enlightenment, and kind of breaking that wheel of reincarnation. However, not everyone's going to get there right away in a lifetime, in several thousand lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And the whole root of what we have to deal with before then is suffering itself. Mm-hmm. So if we could give just a little bit of peace, just a little bit of liberation in the short term to make that journey a little less painful, a little less hard, right, through, like protection through like a long portrait, amulet for like safety when you're traveling and things of that nature, or, like the prapita, which is kind of like will bring blessings in your life in general. What the ultimate goal is with this type of magic is it's kind of aligning you within a certain vibration. So the magic itself that's poured into these amulets comes from using several hundred different types of like plants and holy powders that are composed of numerous different materials And, you know, they're blessed and they're consecrated with specific, you know, kata, these chants, these mantra, and, you know, these very intricate processes are performed to make ultimately an amulet that'll have a specific function. And then it's believed, and it's, you know, very commonly, you know, practiced in Thailand, where people will collect and wear and trade and you know, sell and have these different amulets to make their lives better. I mean, there's even old stories of the, you know, the Thai ghost soldiers when Japan tried to invade, and they, you know, would shoot these Thai soldiers, and the soldiers would fall down, and then they'd get back up, and it was like they were bulletproof in a sense, because they had takruts, which were, you know, special you know, amulets that were made by these monks, and so, you know, this, it's just where do we even begin?
Right. So have the other than the stories, have you witnessed or have you seen anything that in your perception was beyond a normal reality?
Yes, actually. And that is, I have many stories to tell in that regard, but
one of
the most potent is witnessing somebody getting a genuine sakyant tattoo. So like this shirt I'm wearing actually is a good example of sakyant.
Very intricate patterns and very intricate detail.
So they're old spells. And when they do the, you know, the bamboo and they're tapping in and they're chanting the kata, and then they blow the power, as they call it. They call the magic the power. So when they blow the power into it, they'll test the sakyant. And so all these sakyant have different rules depending on the one you get. Some of them, if you agree to get this certain sakyant, well, guess what? You're a vegetarian for the rest of your life now, you know, or you know, some of them have really weird rules. Like you can't walk under a doorway for the first 48 hours, which is like, how do I manage that? You know? Yeah. And so minus all that, the weird part though, was seeing this very sharp, like almost like a kukri blade, like a curved blade, and seeing them slice paper, seeing them slice a watermelon, and you know, like this thing is like really sharp, and then they haul off and they whack the back of someone's neck right after they just got the sakyant, and not a mark. You see a little bit of redness just from where it collided on the skin, but not a single cut. And they only do that to test the power, to show you the power of the sakyant, its protection qualities. However, if you use it to show off, it's not going to work. So it only the power only activates in a time of need. So if someone like were to shoot you or pull a knife on you, you know, like somewhere, like the power of the sakyant would work. It's the same with like Lek Lai making guns jam. You know, it's protection.
And that's something you witnessed yourself.
I actually had a LP Pern, Lumpur Pern, tiger amulet. It's an invulnerability amulet that I still carry with me. And I had, you know, been told this was like, you know, really, really powerful protection from dangers and harm. And I was visiting my stepdad, and he had a handgun that he thought he had a silencer for, but it was actually for a rifle. And so he put it on the handgun, and I was testing it out. I was standing right next to him, and I fired it, and the gun exploded in my hand. And shrapnel shot everywhere. And my stepdad was standing right next to me, and a piece of shrapnel hit his leg, and there was not a mark on me. And around in the grass, we were finding pieces everywhere. And, you know, we could say it's anecdotal, sure, but just by my own experience, I found it to be quite profound that, you know, this shrapnel was everywhere, and it even hit someone right next to me, and it exploded in my hand. And yet there was nothing, like not a scratch, not a mark. I wasn't harmed at all.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, when a gun explodes in your own hand, you would expect that your hand, if nothing else, would have gotten a whole bunch of shrapnel.
I was in a bit of shock. I was like, whoa, did that just happen?
So I'm curious, how did you go from being so steeped in the Theravadin tradition and all of these things that you learned in Thailand into Wicca?
So there was, when I had kind of originally met, you know, Master Thanaphol in Texas, and I told you that that door had been, you know, kind of opened. Mm-hmm. I looked up like a metaphysical store around me, and there was one called Akasha's Treasures, and it was run by this lady named Charlita, who is just an absolutely amazing and dear soul. And I just have so much profound respect for her. She was the Wiccan Coven mother, and she ran this shop out of her garage. And so I'd go by there like a little bit each day. And then I started taking some classes with her. And then before you realize it, like I was kind of like learning two things side by side. And so it was really interesting to me because I was getting this, like this very Eastern based, set of teachings and practices. And then I was getting this more Westernized version of it kind of distilled down. And this is what really helped me over the years, was having these different traditions that I would study and was kind of applying myself in. I was able to make distinctions between them and draw similarities as well, and kind of start to break down, you know, things like magic and spirituality in a more technical manner, especially, you know, the way my mind works is it's like, I'm like the kid that wants to take apart the toaster and look at it, you know? So it was really fascinating for me to be able to study multiple different paths at the same time and kind of draw those comparisons between them. And I will say, like the Tai Wicca and Wicca, they have some very strong similarities. But when we think of the origins of magic and spirituality, I mean, is it really any surprise? They're different flavors of the same recipe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I imagine there must have been some very curious things. Like I've heard things about like different cultures, different indigenous cultures that we know from different parts of the earth, but then you look and they have a symbol for the exact same god and it looks exactly the same, like in Mexico and Egypt. I forget which god it is, but there's one god that you look at the hieroglyph for, it looks exactly the same in both places. So that it does appear that in ancient times things were much more interconnected than we realize they were today. Awesome. Yeah. So before we go to break, I see Patty, loyal listener Patty, has a quick question for you. She wants to know your opinion of crystal skulls, like the famous ones, Max and Einstein.
You know, I would say that obviously there's more to it than we could possibly know. But what my own personal opinion, and that's all it is my own personal opinion, is that it's some sort of artifact from another civilization. Now, whether that be extraterrestrial or whether that be a more advanced, version of humanity that was before us, I don't really know. But I do think it has some sort of technology aspect to it. Like maybe it's kind of like, in a sense, like Lumerian crystals, where there's kind of like a download that can be received from it. Similar to how the monks will download, you know, the power of lineages within, you know, a disciple or a student. I think it's something along those lines, but again, that's only my opinion. I couldn't tell you for sure.
Gotcha. No, that's fine. That's all we're asking for. Beautiful. Yeah. I've heard it said, and again, this is just what I heard from someone else, that the shape of the skull is like a container for consciousness. And so by shaping the crystal in the shape of a skull, it creates a container that allows a consciousness to sort of be housed there. So one possibility, who knows? All right, it's time for us to take our last break of the show. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about how all the things you've learned and how do you work with people today? And like, how does this appeal to, you're obviously a few years younger than me, like how does it appeal to a younger audience? And do you find that it's, you know, taking sort of this different approach to spirituality helps to bring in perhaps a different generation to some of these ancient traditions? Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Sadhu Da, a teacher, a healer. So Sadhu, I'm curious, you know, you come from sort of a different generation than I do, a little bit younger. And do you find like these kinds of topics, these things you talk about, do they appeal to perhaps a different generation of people?
Yeah, this is one of the things that I find to be so fascinating about being what I consider to be like in the middle. So I'm in my early 30s, and people older than me, in my own experience, kind of feel more settled in their paths, or kind of have like that groove like settled in. Mm-hmm. And the people who are younger than me, it feels like they're more, the river is wider. Mm-hmm. They're more open, but, and you know, it's not an insult when I say this, but the people younger than me, this generation's coming up, while they are more open, mm-hmm. and while they are more, you know, sensitive, in some regards, it's also a thing I've noticed where it's more like sensitivity in the sense of, how do I put this? Like almost too soft sometimes. Mm. And life itself is hardship and pain. And, you know, there are going to be things that offend us, and not everybody is going to be, so encouraging, right, or helpful. Right. And so, right, there is this kind of hardness, this leathery quality that some older generations have that the younger generations don't. And what we all need is we need that kind of medium. Right. You can't be too hard. You can't be too rigid, but you also can't be too soft. You can't be too pliable. So, right, it's like, how do we find this healthy medium between these generations?
And so do you find, people are attracted to you because of the different practices and sort of the different path that you've taken? Because you don't necessarily see a lot of people talking about Theravada and magic out there.
No, you don't. At least at least not here in America. A lot of people tend to be drawn to me that have trauma. It's kind of weird. I'm like this like tractor beam that just sucks up like, you know, the horrors of, you know, our internal self. And I often will get people that come to me just broken in many ways, but they're not broken. Mm-hmm. Their neurology and everything is working fine. It's just mm-hmm. screaming out, hey, it's time to heal. It's time to grow. And they're like, you don't understand what I've been through. And I'm like, it doesn't matter because it's time to move forward and let that go. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I just, people tend to gravitate towards me that kind of feel like they're just enough's enough, or they want to give up. I can't say that I've had a student or people in general that come to me that are like, my life's great and everything's fine. Hi, how are you, Sadhu Da?
Yeah, because if everything's great, then you don't really have a reason to look for something else, right? You're just happy where you are. You end up being complacent, but it's only when there's some trial, some tribulation, some pain, some anguish that causes us to look elsewhere for something different. And from the people that you work with these days, do you see any general trends? Do you have any, like, sort of, I would say, general messages for anyone listening today of, like, you know, things to be mindful of or things to be more open-minded about?
The biggest thing that I see, and I guess this could apply for the whole of humanity, is we are just ingrained with this whole sense of individuality, right? You know, be mm-hmm. you, you know, live your expression. And while that is something that is fundamentally true, is it almost breeds this ideal of separatism.
Yeah.
And what I notice most is that us being humans, you know, we are creatures of, you know, seeking society and connection.
We're social animals.
Exactly. And one of the cruelest things that you can do to a human being is you could separate them from the herd and isolate them. Right. And what I see a lot of is people isolating themselves inside their own mind. Yeah, and I cannot think of a suffering greater than that. I mean, sure, we could talk about physical torture and all these things, but like, if we're just getting down to the root of it, what greater pain is there than being isolated inside of yourself? That's a deep soul pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's the cure for that?
The cure for that is learning how to give yourself permission to love yourself and to accept love from others. And while that sounds so simple,
right,
our trauma loves to get in the way and make it more complicated than it needs to be. And you know, it doesn't have to be, but the thing is someone has to kind of show you how to open a door. If you don't know how to open a door, you could stare at it all day long, trying to figure out the intricacies of the lock and the handle and the framing and everything. And then somebody just comes along and they're like, you just turn the knob like this and you push, and you're just mind blown because you're like, how could I have never considered such a thing?
Right.
We overcomplicate everything.
Right. We make things more complicated. And just because something is simple doesn't mean it's easy. It still takes effort. It still takes things like, as you mentioned before, facing your trauma. Like, how can we accept self-love if we have this deep inner feeling of lack of self-worth, of this sense of self-hatred, right? We have to face that trauma, which can be extremely challenging, but it doesn't necessarily have to be all that complicated.
No, and one of the things that I feel is not expressed enough. I see this a lot from, you know, these more new age type metaphysical communities where it's all, you know, healing is light and love and all this like super positivity. And I'm not detracting from that. We need mm-hmm. more of that kind of vibration in this world. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is healing is brutal. It's ugly. Mm-hmm. It's messy. Mm-hmm. It's painful. It's not pretty, you know.
Yeah.
and you know, the raw truth, if we're being really blunt, nobody wants to work on their trauma.
Right.
It's scary. It's frightening.
Until they have no other choice. Right.
But the alternative is far worse.
Yes, absolutely. But I think you just said it was one of the best quotes of the show is, healing is not pretty.
It's not.
It's not. Absolutely. And you know, it's also like going back to that disconnection and that sense of being separate. That's why one of the things I love to do is bring people together in ceremony and group so that we heal together. And that I find when people work on their healing together, that the healing is actually exponentiates because you're doing it with other people, and almost all of our trauma is in conjunction with other people. So when the healing is, it helps to release so much more.
And when you're connecting with others, you're connecting with different expressions of yourself.
Yes. And so you can see sort of the reflection back to you of that aspect of yourself in another person.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, Sadhu, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I really appreciate you and the work that you do. If people want to learn more about you or get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So the best way is you could find my blog, YouTube channel, everything that I have out there at www.thesadhuda.com. And that's S-A-D-H-U. So the Sadhu Da and D-A-H.
D-A-H. And just before we sign off, how did you get the name Sadhu Da and what does it mean?
So Sadhu comes from, you know, Eastern traditions. And, you know, that's a, like a guru, like a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then Da is an old nickname that comes from like from my family. So my grandma would often call me Nikta. And it's some term from Zimbabwe. I don't really know what it means, but and then that just got shortened to Da. And so, and then my music and stuff, I've adopted Da Free as like my music name. And so, you know, Da is just the name I go by, but I'm told it means friend in Italian. Or no, he who gives. So a friend who gives.
That sounds good to me. Well, Sadhu Da, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. It's a pleasure to get to know you. Hey, if you ever make it to New York City, look me up. We can get together.
Will do. I've always wanted to go to New York.
Yeah, it's a very unique place. It's one of those things I say to everyone. It should be on your bucket list. You got to go there at least once.
I'll have to check it out.
Awesome. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in today. Thank you for listening in. And whether you're listening live or in the restream or on the podcast, and you can find us, of course, on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. If you enjoyed today's show, please don't keep it a secret. Share it with your friends and colleagues and people who you think would be interested in this episode. So please don't forget there are all the other great shows on talkradio.nyc later today, 5 p.m. Frank Harrison is doing his show, Frank About Health. He's actually doing a two-hour special tonight. And of course, tomorrow we have Philanthropy in Focus, always Friday, and Monday we kick it off all again with The Edge of Every Day with wonderful Reverend Sandra Bargeman. So thank you all for tuning in. You all take care. We will talk to you next week.
NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.